It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Welcome back, Jim, from Thailand. Let me ask you a question, Jim. I know before you left, you said you weren't taking your Mac. Did you miss your Mac in Thailand?
I did not. I did not miss my Mac one bit. I did not take the Mac. I used the iPad a little bit and the phone most of the time. I swapped out to a Thai SIM card when I got there. So that way nobody from work could text me. So that was nice. So yeah, it was an amazing, amazing trip, amazing country. The nicest people I've ever met. I mean, everybody there just is so nice. You check into your hotel and they have a drink waiting for you and a cold towel, you know, to wipe off your face and your neck. And I mean, it's so nice there. I mean, and it is hot as you
wipe
can imagine.
Off your junk.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's crazy hot there. I mean, like it'll say it's 90 degrees, which 90 degrees in Texas and 90 degrees in Thailand are like two totally different things. I mean, I think I sent y'all some pictures. You saw the pictures. We're just walking around, like walk around for 15 minutes, and I was just drenched in sweat. And I can walk all around downtown Dallas and, you know, no problems at all in this heat. But there, man, it's just like instant, just.
So it's just way more humid. I guess it's more tropical.
I was about to say, Dallas is
tropical.
Yeah, it's like humid squared. It's like if they say it's like 80% humidity, it's like 180%. I mean, it's just, I don't even know. I think their humidity gauges are wrong because it's just always 100%, but it wouldn't say that. It was just always like that there, so.
Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you back. I know adjusting from that massive time difference and going straight back to work had to be very, very challenging for you.
Yeah, it was a tough last week, but I did get to, I actually watched the WWDC while I was in Thailand. So it would have come on about 11 or 12 o'clock at midnight, my time there. I was going to stay up for it, and it was like, just couldn't make it. So the next day, I actually, you know, laid around the hotel room and watched the show. So I'm at least a little bit versed in stuff, and then I've looked at some articles since I've gotten back, and I'm excited to be able to talk about it and get moving.
Fantastic. Let's get it started then. So while you were out, we talked about iOS. We spent quite a bit of time on that. And now let's delve into the Apple TV and the things that were announced for it. So I am so happy that we're finally getting Dolby Atmos in the Apple TV. Now, you know, last fall, I know at least Jim and I bought the Dolby Atmos capable soundbars by Sony, and I like that soundbar a lot. It's really nice. Jim, did you ever calibrate yours so that you could do the proper sound with it, or is that just something you kind of skipped?
No, I did. I did the thing with the roof height and all that. That soundbar, I actually called Best Buy about that soundbar today because for the last month I've been having issues where the subwoofer just constantly disconnects and I have to go over and turn it off and turn it back on to make it reconnect over Bluetooth. Or when it first comes on, the subwoofer doesn't even come on at all. So I called Best Buy to find out what I needed to do, if I needed to bring in just the sub or both. And the guy actually gave me a number to call, and I didn't call it today because I was busy the rest of the day. But I'm going to call them, and he said they may just send somebody out. So you don't, you know, call this number first, and they may send somebody out to look at it versus you having to haul that big old thing in for them to look at. So, you know, I still have it, and I can, as long as I go walk over there and turn the subwoofer on, it works for, you know, a couple hours before it just miraculously decides to turn off again. And that could be just the crazy Bluetooth here in my environment that's giving it issues. And
it's all that 2.4 gigahertz spectrum you're
could
in.
Be. But I'm still going to give them hell about it and see if, you know, see if they can get me another one at least just to try another one to see if that's the problem. And if it really is, then it looked like there was a port on the back of it to where maybe I could get a cable and actually just, because mine are close enough to where, at least for right now, I could actually plug the sub into the sound bar if that's possible. You know, if I moved or somewhere, maybe the sub wouldn't be as close, but they're close enough now to where I could actually use a cable. So
I'll do that. Stick so you can hit the power button.
yeah, that would be great.
So one of the reasons I'm so fond of that Dolby Atmos soundbar and why I'm so excited about this is that in order for me to take advantage of Dolby Atmos, it's the situation that you have with the streaming devices in the market today is that it's really sort of a sad situation if you want to do Dolby Atmos, because there's not a lot of support for that in your streamers. And if you're deeply invested in the Apple ecosystem like we are, it's a particularly sad case. So when I got the LG television, the nice thing about it, in addition to being 4K and OLED, is that it also had the built-in Dolby Atmos that it does through the pass-through with the ARC connection to the soundbar. And many of the purchases that I made through iTunes, those that have Dolby Atmos, well, if you're using the Movies Anywhere app, so your purchases through iTunes that show up inside of Movies Anywhere, some of those do actually have Dolby Atmos on the LG television. The only sort of thing that was kind of annoying is that if I wanted the Marvel movies or Star Wars or something like that in 4K, I could only buy them through the LG, through the Vudu app, actually, which is, strangely enough, Walmart's streaming app, was the only one that would sell them with Dolby Atmos and 4K. So I could still watch them in 1080p or, in some cases, 4K on the Apple TV, but no Dolby Atmos. So to get the best experience, I've had to watch a lot of my movies through the Vudu app on the LG television, and I hate that so very much. So I'm very, very excited about seeing all of the purchases that I have. And just like when they went from 1080p to 4K, those conversions should be automatic. So my entire library should be caught up. I'm going to be very, very happy about that. Now, if only Disney and Apple could get their situation worked out so that my 4K Marvel purchases would come through in 4K on the Apple TV. But I bet you that I'll be surprised if that isn't worked out by the fall. I mean, I feel very confident about that.
It does seem something like that they should be working on and, I mean, progressing on. AirPlay 2, you know, is finally here, and you know they're adding the other perks, and I know they want the 4K Apple TV to be the be all end all everything that it can be. I mean, that's where they're positioning it, at least. That's what they're charging for. You know, they're charging more than Fire Sticks and Google. What is the Google Stick called? I don't remember.
Chromecast.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, the Apple TV costs more money. You know, so let's get it all the high end features and make use of that processor in there.
And if you watch the movies with the Dolby Atmos, they really, really sound amazing. I was watching a movie. Some of the Netflix movies actually have Dolby Atmos support. So I know the Punisher TV series on there does. Some of their documentaries, you don't see that if you're going through the Apple TV today. It just says like 5.1 or whatever. But if you're watching it on, if you're going through the Vudu app, I'm not the Vudu app, sorry. If you're using the Netflix app on the LG television, because it supports Atmos, it'll show the titles that are on there. I was watching this terrible movie called Ibiza on Netflix that had the lady from Community in it. Did you guys watch that too?
Last night I was looking to watch something, and I watched the previews for that, and I actually thought it looked pretty fun. The lady from SNL that's on there, she's really funny. Vanessa so you didn't Bayer, like the movie at all?
I mean, it was okay. I watched the whole thing. It did take me a while to make it all the way through. It was all right. It's one of those things that I wouldn't have paid money for in the theater. Like, it would have been a movie pass type movie, but it was okay.
It looked like a female version of The Hangover, kind of.
Well, kind of. I mean, it aspired to be such, but it wasn't quite. The plot was very, very thin. But it was one of those that was in Dolby Atmos. So I'm sitting there watching other things on Netflix, and they sound okay. But then you get to that where there's a lot of there's like a lot of EDM, and it's thumping, and it fills the room. Like you feel like you're there. So some of those titles do have Atmos, and it's weird the ones that just seem to have it. I mean, it's not widespread across. That Bright movie that was Will Smith was in that came out at Christmas, that's also a Dolby Atmos title. It was one of the first ones that I was able to try with that. It just sort of hit or miss. Like the demo Atmos stuff sounds great when they do like you're sitting in a rainforest or you hear a baseball go flying around. Like it really works. But a lot of the movies don't seem to really take advantage of that field of sound, at least through the soundbar it doesn't. But that one in particular, maybe it was because it was music heavy. I don't know, but it did a good job. Very, very excited about this.
I'll have to try that out then. It sounds like up my alley with the music and stuff.
Yeah, once you get it in September with the Apple TV release, just spend a weekend looking for Dolby Atmos titles on Netflix. It's worth it just for fun. Your neighbors may not like you, but you'll dig it. Let's see, Zero Sign-On. So I'm really excited as both an AT&T broadband customer and a DirecTV Now subscriber. I'm really excited about the Zero Sign-On, if it works as advertised. So anything you have access to through the TV Anywhere type app. So if you're using Discovery Channel or, you know, Comedy Central or whatever, if it detects that you're on your provider's broadband, like if you get your television and your internet from the same company, you're going to be golden. So I guess for, you know, like Spectrum subscribers, Comcast subscribers, people like me with AT&T and DirecTV, it should be a good time, I think.
Is Brian the only one here that gets internet and TV from the same provider?
Nope. I've got the evil empire of Comcast Xfinity.
Okay. Because I just have Spectrum internet and then just streaming services. But the only thing I get from Spectrum is internet. So
right. I only have internet, too. I don't pay for TV. don't want to pay for TV outside of streaming services.
Right. Yeah.
To be fair, it's a fluke that I have it, right? I mean, if I didn't have that great grandfather deal through DirecTV Now, and I didn't have the gig of fiber or whatever, it would mean nothing to me. But I don't use those TV apps as much as I used to. I do use the DirecTV app a lot more, like a traditional TV experience, but I do like having the option. So that's really nice. But I think we're probably going to get more around tvOS in the fall, right? And remember last year, they didn't have anything that was high on details. You just sort of had to read the tea leaves that we were getting 4K in the fall when they talked about all the new codecs on all the new OSs that could handle it so well. But at least these two will be nice. There was no mention of Apple's upcoming TV shows, which I thought was kind of weird too. But I guess that's really not the forum for a developer conference to talk about content, I guess, if you think about it.
Right, they just signed Oprah. I saw that.
Yeah, they're starting to shell out those big bucks. Yeah.
So with mine, I do watch the DirecTV a good bit. Yesterday I was watching soccer yesterday morning, and then the U.S. Open yesterday afternoon. So that was nice. I did notice that when I was in Thailand and I was trying to stream the NBA Finals, that none of my streaming services work there because it's like, hey, you're in Thailand. You're not allowed to do any of this.
VPN, so. Yo.
I tried some VPN stuff, but I was doing it on iOS devices, and it's impossible for them not to be able to pick up your they want your location when you're on an iOS device. And even if you're on a VPN, they can get your location from my iPad. Like, the iPad will tell it the location, not the VPN. Like, even if I'm going through a different network. So even if I tell it I'm in Chicago or LA or something. So that was kind of a pain.
That's interesting with the View app, the PlayStation View. Now, granted, I haven't tried this in a while, but some of those things have restrictions where it's like, we won't let you stream this outside your house. So I would just VPN back to my house and then do it that way. And it was just happy to let me do it then. So I've, you know, trying it international is a good, that'll be a good test. Maybe I'll try that sometime where I have but then again, I wasn't watching content-based restriction stuff either. So
yeah, this was the NBA finals. So, and I mean, this whole zero sign on thing, it is something where, yes, like you, I'm grandfathered into this amazing DirecTV Now deal. If Charter Spectrum made me, you know, close to that deal for one of their streaming services, TV services, or even the other, I guess, the regular cable, God forbid I actually have TV come over a cable. You know, I'm not opposed to switching. I mean, I like the DirecTV app, the Now app now. It records, you know, that works well. The cloud DVR is out of beta and working well. So, I mean, I think it's a good feature, and the fact that Spectrum's jumping on it to be the first U.S. provider to support it will be, I think, good for them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty nice. So that's so much for the Apple TV, though. Moving on to the Apple Watch. So let's see some of the things that came through that were kind of nice. Let's start with the one that would probably impact all of us the most: podcast support. Finally, we're getting podcasts on the Apple Watch. Do you guys do any music streaming through your watch now? Have you ever tried it?
I did just the other day because I was getting a new battery put in my phone, and oh my God, I thought I was going to die just not having my phone in my hand. But
boredom, I know.
I mean, I just had to go and like tool around at the Barnes & Noble next door, you know, and I was just like, this is awful. So anyway, yeah, I was streaming music directly to my watch and then into my AirPods, and that was just really nice. And then, of course, you know, I was via my voice sending texts back and forth to my wife through the AirPods.
Very so cool.
I still had some functionality. I mean, obviously, you can't type out every single text that you want to send on your watch, but it's definitely nice to be able to do it, you know, through the voice part. And the Apple folks said, yeah, come back and get your phone at 8 o'clock. So I set an alarm on my phone for 7:45 so I wouldn't forget. I could go next door and go get my phone.
I've only done music controls via my watch, like controlling my phone playing stuff. Like if I'm in the pool and my phone's sitting out playing off a Bluetooth speaker, I've, you know, I control the music from my watch while in the pool. That's fun, kind of DJ from your watch. But as a little bonus surprise here in the middle of the podcast, I will report now that I actually ordered a new Apple Watch this weekend. So
tell us about it.
So right now I have a Stainless Series 2, and I've been thinking about getting the Series 3. Is it 3 with cellular? I guess that's the right number. Best Buy put refurbished models on a pretty big sale this weekend. It was like $80 off what it would have cost me. And what I ended up getting was the space gray Nike edition with cellular. And so that's supposed to come in later this week. We're recording on a Monday, so it's supposed to be here in a day or two. And then I think with my stainless one, I'm actually going to sell the stainless with the Milanese loop, like on Craigslist or something, and see what I can get for it. Because I would keep the loop for myself and sell the stainless watch with just a different band. But because I'm getting the black, I don't want the silver Milanese loop, you know, with the, or the gray, you know, because I'm going back aluminum from my stainless. I really like the stainless. I like the way it looks. But now that I've realized I like the Apple Watch, I'm using it, I'm wearing it every day, and I'm finally like admitting to myself that you're probably going to upgrade like every year and a half or two, you know, sort of schedule. I'm not sure that, at least for me, if it's worth paying the premium for the stainless, you know, or the space black, you know, stainless version. So I'm going back to aluminum, and we'll see how that works, but it'll have the cellular built in. So, well, plus with the cellular, I have to pay a monthly fee. So it's like I'm going to pay a whole lot more for a watch, and I'm now adding a monthly fee to stream, you know, to the watch. So go with the cheaper watch.
Well, I think I'm the only one of us that was, I don't know if it's bravery or idiocy, but I updated my Apple Watch Series 3 cellular to the watchOS 5 beta. Luckily, I did not update it to the watchOS beta 5 version 1 that came out and bricked a bunch of people's devices. I waited for them to pull it off the market and then put it back out there, and I figured they couldn't be wrong twice, right? It's like, you know, it's like, you know, after a plane crash, you just go fly that company that had the plane crash, because it's just not going to happen again right away.
So, I see a lot of shaking heads here. Like, Jason's just happy and smiling and talk about this, and me, Brad, and Brian are all like shaking our heads like, nope.
Anything where if it goes wrong, you have to send your watch back to Apple to get it fixed. You know what? I can wait.
If I can't plug it in and fix it, I'm not gonna put beta on it.
Yes, if only I can fix it through software, then it's fine. But if Apple has to fix it, then that's a step beyond. That's just one step too far.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all remember that, but I did it two years ago. I upgraded my phone, and then my phone wanted to upgrade the watch, and I didn't even think about it. And I said, okay, go ahead and update the watch with the beta. And then the phone was so buggy that I rolled the phone back. I did like a rollback, you know, I like basically put it in RDU mode or whatever it's called, and
DFU
mode, and, you know, put the regular OS back on. And my watch was like, nope, I'm not talking to that phone. And, you know, then I tried to reset the phone, and basically, I ended up with just a little chunk of metal for a couple of weeks until I could get them both on the same thing.
That was a hard lesson learned.
Kudos to you, Jason. You're a brave man.
Well, so
you're a daredevil.
So let me share my favorite things that I found so far. Grouped notifications on the watch are absolutely outstanding. Also, the fact that you can dismiss notifications on your watch and it dismisses them on all your other iDevices is great, and it keeps them in sync. So like for me, sometimes I post, you know, some cool gun pictures on Instagram, and, you know, like one of the bigger Instagram accounts will regram it or whatever, and I could be sitting there, and then all of a sudden I've got like 1,000 notifications that people have come and liked my photo or given me shout outs or whatnot. And so it's nice to have them just all grouped right there. Or like, for instance, there are news articles, so it'll take like the last 8 Apple News articles. Well, maybe I only want to actually go read 3 of those, so I can dismiss 5 and leave 3, and they're available to me on my watch or my phone or my iPad whenever I decide to go read them. Second thing that I found that was pretty cool is I went to physical therapy the other day, and, you know, one of the things that they get you to do almost anywhere, they want to get you a little bit of flexibility and get your heart rate up a little bit, so they stick you on a bicycle. Well, walk in, sign in, get on the stationary bike, and like a minute and a half in, I get a little notice on my watch, and it's like, are you having a workout? I was like, yes, I am. And so I selected that it was indoor bicycle, and it gave me, you know, like 30 seconds of retroactive credit for it. But it also realized when I stopped too. So like 30 seconds after I stopped pedaling, it was like, are you done with your workout?
It's like, hi, sir, you're either exercising or you're having a heart attack. Could you please let us know?
So that's really good that the group notifications and the retroactive workout stuff is working and working as expected. So that I was going to ask about the group notifications, but that's nice. And Jim may be excited to know that now that third-party apps can play background audio, there's no reason we couldn't have a Spotify app on the watch as well if they would just take the time to make
one. Yeah, I mean, they could make an Apple TV app any day now, too, if they'd like.
I feel like Spotify would benefit from that just because it seems like one of their things that they're going to benefit from would be, you know, data metrics. And especially if they're going to keep their price where they are and not try to get subscribers, like not as be as aggressive to gain subscribers as Apple seems to be.
That's really sort of helped Netflix, if you notice, too. They've been on every device that can play video signal, even going so far as to sign deals with cable companies to end up on cable boxes, which seems like, you know, why would they do that? But they don't care. As long as you're watching it, they don't care about the platform. So I'm hoping Spotify gets with the program and does that too. What about the customizable control center? So as the one playing with the beta, have you customized your control center at all there, Jason?
I have not. I'm not a watch power user at all. I will probably become more of a power user now that watchOS 5 seems like it's going to be, you know, kind of what we should have had a couple of years ago, in my opinion. So I will probably end up watching some more of the tutorials on how to really actually use a lot of the features that I'm not using right now. Hopefully I'll be able to share some of those in the coming podcasts.
Features you're not using right now for Jim, that's Siri.
Yeah, power user Jim says it's 7:11 p.m. That's my power user on my watch. I love my watch. I just bought a new one, but that's the best thing my watch does is tell me the time and tell me the weather.
So some of the new things that that were announced that aren't as interesting to me, walkie-talkie mode.
That actually seemed kind of neat.
Why?
Oh, I'm going to be walkie-talkieing you. And you're probably going to be walkie-talkieing me. You're going to be like, hey, Jim, you're late. You're late. We're recording. Hey, Jim, you're late. Hey,
Jim, I would definitely use it for that.
There you go.
You know what? You got me on that one. Actually, I will do that. I see myself doing that. Only but if we can do group in case it's multiple people are late. But yes, okay, I would use it for that. Didn't the iPhone itself get that a while ago or at some point, or am I just remembering?
There was an app, I think, that came down the pipe that did it. And of course, you would have to download the app, and someone else would have to download the app. But there was, and I remember seeing some popularity of it, you know, people posting about it on Facebook or whatever, saying, hey, check out this new walkie-talkie app.
I loved Push-to-Talk back in the Nextel days. I mean, it was great. Push-to-Talk was so much better than having to, like, call somebody or do something. Just doot-doot, you know, hey, what's up? You know, are you there? I loved it on Nextel phones. When I got rid of my Nextel BlackBerry, and I forget what I switched to from there, but it was like Nextel BlackBerry, and there was Nextel Sprint BlackBerry, and then I went to something else, and then it was over to AT&T for iPhones. So
I never knew anybody personally that had Nextel, but I do remember our where I was working, the building management people, they gave Nextel phones to all of their employees. So if you were building management and you had lots of buildings in a downtown area, you know, one building engineer could call another one just by using push to talk, which I think was really cool, just based on their you know, profession.
Yeah, I mean, after Hurricane Katrina in South Mississippi, Nextel phones were the only ones that were working. All the other towers for every other provider were down. And so I remember for the first day or two, I was using my phone, my ex-wife using her phone, and we were charging them as best we could using generators. Other people were using our phones, so, you know, we were the only ones with phones. By day three, they all stopped working because if you try to use your phone, you would get a message that all those channels had been blocked off for emergency crews only because it was the only cell signals that were up down there. So they basically blocked everybody from using but emergency services. It was like day three afterwards when you started getting that message if you tried to do your phone for anything. It was pretty crazy. Huh.
So let's see. So you don't have to say, hey, dingus, when raising your wrist. So Siri will automatically be listening. Have you tried that out, Jason? Is it pretty cool?
That doesn't work.
What?
That's why I just read it in the show notes and raised my wrist several times, and it doesn't work.
Maybe they haven't turned that on yet. Maybe that'll be a feature in the new hardware.
Actually, let me check and see if there are Siri settings in the Watch app where I would need to turn that on.
Well, while you do that, let's see. Some WebKit data can be seen. So I'm kind of happy about this, even though I don't think it's going to be very visible. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. My old eyes will probably have a hard time with it. But at least getting some website data being fed to you over the watch, I think, will be kind of nice if you get an email that has it. Or I hate seeing that continue on your iPhone type of
screen scrape type stuff.
Yeah, just something. Getting the Siri shortcuts and third-party apps in the Siri watch face, that's going to be kind of nice. I'm looking forward to that. Let's see. Some of the stuff, not so much. Challenge friends to a 7-day exercise competition. Well, come on. I mean, normally I would win. Here lately I've been slacking off, but you know.
Not slacking as bad as Brad.
Brad apparently was just in a coma over the weekend, but that's okay. He earned it, man. It was Father's Day.
That's right. No, I guess I got to give a little bit of background. You know, Brad said that he had a rough long week, and I just kind of lounged around the house a little bit on a Saturday. But right before bed, I looked at my watch and it showed that Brad had burned a whopping 96 calories all day long.
That was like, probably like a couple of trips to the bathroom, you know.
Man, I was rocking it in Thailand. It was like I was up and going out every night and out till 3 or 4 in the morning, and so it made getting all my activity and stuff in a lot easier.
That and all the Red Bull.
Exactly. Invented in Thailand.
See, I didn't realize that till you told me that. Let's see. Siri Watch Face is getting the live sports scores, commute time, and heart rate tracking, which is kind of nice. The commute time seems like a gimme because Siri will do that automatically on the phone. Live sports scores, that's kind of nice. If it knows you like a team and you ask about it, it'll start telling you. So that will be nice because I don't like having to ask Siri about it now. Even though on the watch, it is a good experience because if you ask what's the score of whatever game, it will put the logos up and the score in like a scoreboard format, which is kind of nice. I like that, but that's going to be even better, I think. I'm trying to think, is there anything else on the watch that we noted that was worth talking about? I'm really hoping this is a year that the watch goes independent. I would really like to see that. I don't think it's going to be, but when we get that truly standalone device, I'm going to be very excited. I think that's when I'm going to splurge for the ceramic when they finally do that.
How long was it before the iPhone went standalone? Was it iPhone 5?
When you say standalone, what do you mean?
Sorry? Well, I mean to where you didn't have to connect it to the computer to activate it.
Oh, that's probably right. Either 4S or 5, one of those where it did the over-the-air updates.
Yeah, now it doesn't like connecting to the computer at all. A week or two ago, I tried to copy some like ringtones and stuff to my phone, and that basically just doesn't work anymore, period. Just doesn't work. You just can't transfer tones onto your phone now through iTunes.
I think they took that functionality away, did they not? They want you to buy them in the store.
Yeah. They got rid of the ability to, you know, do apps, but I can still do ringtones from the iTunes app. But it does require a little, you know, trying to bump around in some buttons and checkboxes and whatnot.
Who uses ringtones anymore? Come on. It's all about the
vibrations. I have a Rick and Morty ringtone on my phone, and it's great.
I like using different text tones for different people.
Am I the only one that's silent on their phone and they're like everything vibrate watch only?
I love sound on my phone because I ignore the vibrations.
I have periods where I go through where I feel like being obnoxious, so I do turn it off, and then I've got the Rick and Morty tone turned up all the way. So
what's your Rick and Morty tone?
The theme song.
My phone on silent when I'm at work. I just turn it way down. So if I'm sitting at my desk, I still got noises coming out of my desk. Would that drive you nuts, Brian?
It would irritate the hell out of me. You're one of those people. Actually, one of my coworkers I've worked with the longest has a modem sound for his.
Oh, and, that's horrible. That loud. Would be, he's that had would it, come on.
He's had it since 2012, and he just does it, I think, to troll me. I think that's the only reason he still uses it. I'm like, why do you do that? Well, nobody's phone, other phone, will sound like this. So I know if I hear this. I was on a call. I was on a call with a customer the other day, and he was in the background, and it goes off. And the customer's like, did we get disconnected? What the hell was that noise? And I'm like, that's just my obnoxious coworker. You can ignore that. He heard it and he had a good chuckle. So I think that covers the Apple Watch. Let's talk about macOS. Brad, your favorite. Do you want to lead us off on that? Talk us through
Mac it. macOS is my baby. So that was probably my favorite part of WWDC. You know, whenever Craig hits the stage for the second time, since he's the head of software engineering, etc. I think probably my favorite thing he announced was probably the new Finder stuff, where they have the metadata for photos directly in the Finder window, and the true dark mode now. Those Cocoa apps look so awesome in dark mode.
True dark mode is so long overdue. This is like one of the things I've been asking for forever. And there was a comparison floating around out there between dark mode on Windows and dark mode on macOS, and the one on the Mac looks so much nicer.
Oh, yeah. The one on Windows 10 looks awful.
And I really like the stacks on the desktop. That's really awesome.
So I'm personally happy about Siri support for HomeKit finally existing on the Mac. That makes me happy, even though I may not use it very often, but at least having the feature parity. So it looks like the Home app is going to be there as well. But, you know, it's nice to be able to say, you know, open my garage door or turn on my fan or turn off my light. Now, most of the time I'll use the HomePod for that since it's right behind me. But, you know, at work it'll be nice to not have to always pick up my phone or my watch. Whatever device I'm working on, I want that sort of continuity, if you will. So I'm very happy about that. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I want to be like, hey, lady, make this touch bar do something useful.
Ah, turn my MacBook into a MacBook without a touch bar. Without the butterfly keys.
Yeah, they didn't talk about that. I think the dark mode is probably what I'm most excited about. That's pretty cool. I'll definitely be using that when it becomes available. Otherwise, there wasn't a whole lot that you know I was too excited about. You know, we've gotten away from mountain ranges. That's nice.
What about the continuity camera? So I know this seems like a weird thing, but oftentimes I will take a picture of something on my phone and then use AirDrop to send it to my Mac. And I used to text it to myself before AirDrop invented. This is one of those things that just should have already existed a long time ago.
I agree.
Just assume that want it.
I just looked at the show notes and it's even bolded. Fave icons in Safari.
Is it fave icons or fav icons? I'm not sure.
I always call it fave icons, but favicon. I don't care what you call them. It's a GIF or a GIF. But I've been using the tech preview since about mid last week just to try it out. And man, that's great.
Will it make you give up Chrome?
I haven't used Chrome in a while. Remember, I switched to Firefox.
Oh, right.
I'm that one guy, like that Opera guy, that I'm the Firefox guy now. But I've been using Safari preview for a couple of weeks here, or, you know, for probably about a week now. I think I did it early last week when I switched over.
I did learn something new, with Firefox. Oftentimes in my work, I need a clean browser session, so I turn on private mode by default with Firefox, just because if you're working in the software that I work in, if you want to go between multiple instances, I don't like having some of that login cruft, because you can log into one instance, and then if you... Long story short, I need to be able to pop between sessions and not have the login history from my session be persistent. So I turn that on, and containers does not work if you're in the private mode, I guess, because it treats everything as one big private mode. So, because I went to do the new container, and it was like... Because I thought, wow, I can be logged into multiple instances at once. And it's like, well, it doesn't work that way. So... I can totally glean the benefits of it, but I did give it a shot after you talked about it.
Well, you could keep it out of private mode. You can actually have a different container for different logins if you wanted.
That's true. But like I say, the continuity camera, very pleased about that. The tightening down of what can be tracked in the browser. If that wasn't a shot at Facebook and Google, I don't know what was. So I'm very happy about that. So it looks like you're sort of similar to the container mechanism that you were talking about, being able to really clamp down on the cross-site trackability of a user is going to be a lot harder in Safari. I really like how they are very much a privacy-minded company in every single thing that they do. And I hope this doesn't become like the new ad blocker type of thing where, you know, if you're using any kind of ad blocker at all, every site you go to just nags the crap out of you to turn it off. And I hope that these companies, you know, rather than try to beg you to disable something, just try to come up with a better way to give you an experience without being so creepy and pervasive.
I personally think Apple is going out of their way now to block that kind of stuff, just to kind of be a-holes to the other big companies that basically live off of advertising and everything. I mean, they're just like, we don't do it, so we can block all this stuff and it doesn't affect us at all. And it makes them look worse when we start all this and, you know, and then we're blocking them from tracking you. And so, I mean, I don't even think they would do as much of it if, you know, I'm sure Tim's just like, whatever we can do to make them look bad. It goes both ways. It makes them look bad and it makes us look good. It like makes the bar go both ways with one little feature.
Well, if you think about it too, there's never been a better time to launch that feature. When you have, you know, have Zuckerberg testifying before Congress, when you have, you know, Apple, I mean, with when you have Google doing things like, you know, it's trying to fake human phone calls and human interactions, like Facebook and Google are going out of their way to prove, you know, who can out-creep the other. So to have one company that just goes, you know what, we're better than that. And it sort of throws down the gauntlet and it gives them something to think about. Like, well, if they're doing this, why don't we? And it's really, if you think about it, a remarkable change. Because think about how often Apple used to get dragged across the coals of, you don't support Flash, you don't support this. They're breaking what are common practices across the web. I mean, I think it's great they're doing it, but that they have the pull to be able to do it is nothing short of, I mean, this could cause significant problems, at least for the Apple faithful. It'll hurt more on for Safari on iOS than it will
right,
on Mac.
Right, I was just going to say, on the Mac, I don't think it matters as much because people do use Safari, but a lot of people use Chrome just because Chrome. I'm not going to say a lot of people use Firefox or anything else. I think if people are switching on a Mac, generally they're going to probably be switching to Chrome versus Safari. But on the phone, I don't know anybody who just doesn't use Safari on their phone. I don't think anybody's, like, I think we all probably use a different mail app on the phone or iPad, but I just use Safari on my phone and iPad. I have Chrome on there, I think, and maybe even Firefox, but it's not like I ever click on them. They're just there. So I think it's a much bigger deal on the phones than it is the desktop. And quite frankly, I think as far as web traffic goes, there's probably just as much or more mobile traffic now as there is traffic coming from desktops. So on the phone is where it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you guys think of the App Store changes, making the Mac App Store look a lot more like the iOS App Store? And apparently some of the restrictions being loosened to the point that Bare Bones and Panic are putting software back in the Mac App Store.
I hope it works. I mean, I personally didn't think the Mac App Store was savable. As much stuff has moved out of there. Personally, if I can buy anything outside of the App Store versus buying it in the App Store, I always buy it out now just because I figure eventually I'm probably going to have a better options for upgrades, you know, like if I'm going to buy an upgrade and be able to get it cheaper or anything like that, if I buy it outside the App Store. So, I mean, I kind of avoid it. And Brad, you're a Set App user, right? So you're getting most of all your stuff through that, so...
Yeah, I do use several apps from SetApp, so there has been some crossover just because of I may have bought, say, an old version of something, version 1, and now SetApp has version 2 or beyond in it, so it's still hanging around in my App Store, you know, purchase list for an old version of SetApp.
If we assume that they've gotten past the sandbox restrictions, which I think would be, you know, if you're bringing something like Transmit back, Transmit couldn't exist before, or they wouldn't let it exist before on the Mac for some of the things that it did. So I'm hoping that some of those, they didn't really explicitly mention that, but I think that was sort of the in-between-the-line sort of assessment was for these things to come back. For me, the biggest advantage of not using a Mac App Store is the updates, right? Is that, you know, we used to see when 1Password, I used to buy that through the Mac App Store, and if you had it outside the Mac App Store, those updates came fast and furious, just bug fix after bug fix after bug fix as quickly as they could get them out. And with the Mac, it seemed like it took forever for them to make it through the approval process. So I'm kind of with you guys. I like going outside of the Mac App Store, but I do like having one place, one-stop shopping, and not having to comb through all my licenses and go, oh, where did I get that from? Which, you know, again, would be an advantage of SetApp, right? That's the one thing that they don't allow on iOS that they don't seem to care about on the Mac is having an alternate app store. So, yeah, I guess if in a marketplace where they have to compete, they have to make it better. So let's hope that improves. Let's see, before we get to the big one, eGPU support improves. So if you want to play games on the Mac, this is your way to do it. I know that was announced originally in 2017. But they made a big deal about it in 2018. So, Brad, you seem like you'd be the most likely to hook up an external... Well, I don't know. I say that Jason actually may be the guy who would be the most likely to do that. Either of you guys looking at doing that? I'm assuming Jim wouldn't. I wouldn't probably, but thoughts?
I've considered it. It may or may not happen, but it is a really cool option that, you know, is there now that Windows users have had for a long time.
What about you, Jason?
I just don't do really any high-end gaming or any kind of super graphic-intensive stuff, and now having an iMac Pro as my main machine, I just don't really see myself using it.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I don't know enough rendering stuff that I wouldn't move from the PC over to the iMac just for the additional trouble that I would have to go through. Plus, there's not really any games on the iMac that I would want to do. I mean, I guess they're gearing up for a potential, you know, AR, VR type future, but I don't know. It's nice that the option exists. I just don't see this being a big deal or big selling point for a lot of people. And of course, the last big announcement that we had out of macOS and iOS was that they're not merging, but you will be able to run certain iOS apps on the Mac. What do you guys think about this?
I think it's pretty great. If they're going to do like stock app and, you know, maybe even the weather app, you know, having those is kind of almost like Mac widgets that are interactive. It would be kind of cool. Like I wouldn't mind seeing something where if you had iOS apps as kind of like a different hot corner. Like I use hot corners. Bottom right hot corner puts my display to sleep and locks the workstation. So I could see like maybe top right or bottom left. You know, if I wanted a quick glance and, you know, maybe there was a sports widget and a weather widget and a stock widget, you know, where I could just kind of bring those into focus real quick and then shift off of them. I could see using that, getting decent mileage out of that.
I'm sort of interested in the technology behind it. Are they doing some sort of software emulation since you have a Intel in your Mac, but it's not an Intel that's in your iOS device? So, you know, are they using something like with Xcode where you sort of emulate the app on the Xcode iPhone emulator? Is it going to be something like that as far as the background part is going?
Not really sure, but you would figure it has to be emulation, even though you do have more and more Macs that are starting to get sort of the ARM chips that are put in there as secondary type things like the Touch Bar and your other things that they've been putting in recently. But I don't think that'll come into play. I think it'll be emulation. I mean, things that are written in Electron today are seem like no-brainers, right? I mean, you know, we used to use Slack a long time ago internally, us. And I still use it for work. And if you use it on the web, using the one from the Mac App Store, it's just an Electron app. And it kind of sucks, right? It's just a glorified browser window. Because if you log in from Safari and enable notifications, it's identical to what you would get if you were installing the Mac app from the App Store. So not that the iOS app is that great, but I would rather just have that instead of having some Electron app. So I see a lot of those types of apps sort of going away. Visual Studio on the Mac is an Electron app.
I think there's some great little games that could stand to make a little money on the Mac. You know, just that kind of thing. I mean, not stuff like, obviously, like Pokemon Go wouldn't work for the Mac unless you want to, you know, get one of those cases where you can put your iMac on your shoulder and carry it around and then catch
Pokemon.
We're
going to put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to put that in the show notes for the listeners. There was a thing where someone posted where they were walking around. There's an actual thing you can make where you can put your iMac or iMac Pro in an over-the-shoulder case, and it was the most garish, pretentious, awkward, just ugly.
It's like, this is how I go to Starbucks kind of post. It was funny. Something on Reddit. It was funny. But
what kind of loser does that? Anyway, sorry, I don't want to distract you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, you know, there are some fun little games on iOS that I, you know, I think would translate well to, you know, to clicking around on a Mac. So hopefully that kind of stuff is possible, you know, things that have some more advanced graphics just besides. I mean, if you think about it, something like Spark that I use for email on both, I think having the iOS Spark app on my Mac would actually be pretty useful. I mean, you know, it does everything I need there. You know, it'd be almost having right now you have an iOS view or an iPhone view and an iPad view for the same app. Like you have a UI change from the iPad to the iPhone, they could actually just come up with a third UI that's for the Mac, you know, and so something like Things, you could have one app instead of having to have, you know, them to develop a custom Mac app. I mean, and I guess Things might not be the best example because they're probably always going to have a custom Mac app, but something like that where, you know, you could actually have one app with three different UIs built in and use it on all three devices.
It would be nice. I picture things where people wouldn't normally build a Mac app. You could take, I don't know, a popular podcast app that doesn't support, that doesn't like something other than the iPhone for the most part.
There you go.
And put it on.
There you go. That's a really good example. Yeah.
So, but the gaming aspect I didn't really consider, but that would be a good thing too, because why would you want to exclude potential? I mean, well, the way games are done now, it's in-app gratification and in-app purchases. So if you give them one more venue to which they could play a game, you know, why not? So, and it's kind of, if you think about it, it feels sort of like what they do with tvOS. Like you buy a game like Alto's Odyssey or Alto's Adventure on the iPhone. If you have that feature turned on, you automatically get it on your Apple TV. Like if they did something like that for the Mac where it's automatically installed, if it's a compatible thing, like, yeah, that should be something you should be able to do. I'm a lot more excited about this feature than I was when we started recording or even when I heard about it.
whatever you said, the podcast thing, that definitely piqued my interest simply because trying to use Pocket Cast, you know, you have to open a browser and do it in there. I could imagine using Pocket Cast in an app type venue on the
same
on
for
the
Overcast
Mac. Yeah,
as well.
Right, exactly. That would
be great.
I
mean, you know, Marco's coming if you can, like if it's easier like that. I mean, people have been begging him for a Mac version of Overcast since the day one that Overcast came out. But I think it was the kind of thing where, and I kind of agree with him, it's probably not monetarily, you know, the time that it would take to develop something for the Mac is probably wouldn't make the money back. But if you could just take the iOS app and kind of port it a little bit and just put it on the Mac, then, you know, bingo, that would be ideal.
Well, speaking of the sorry state of the Mac, I read an article earlier this week. I don't remember who it was, but it was talking that excluding the iMac Pro, not one machine in the Apple lineup, no MacBook, no MacBook Pro, no Mac Mini, has been updated in over a year. Not even spec bumps.
Yeah, it's really weird that they don't do the spec bumps, and that's it's kind of telling. It's weird that they treat the Mac like they treat the iOS devices, and I don't know, the desktop world, laptop world just doesn't roll that way. They want spec bumps, and it's one of these days when they have, like when Gruber does the After WWDC podcast and he has them up there, that would be a question worth asking. Like, what is it? What is your aversion to just doing spec bumps? Why would you let this go on this long without at least changing the CPU? If you don't have anything else to change, at least do that. I think that's actually everything that we had from the remaining three options. Since you weren't here when we did iOS and you're looking at the show notes, is there anything that you want to talk about, Jim, from an iOS perspective since you didn't get to in the last show? Things you're looking forward to, things you're excited about?
Probably the Memojis the most. No, I'm kidding. I'm sad I missed the CarPlay talk where Brian got Sherlocked. I think
in the space of 24 hours, I might.
Yeah. So I'm excited for group notifications. I do think that'll be nice. I think I'd be more likely to use that feature. Some of the gestures that are going to make their way onto the iPad from the phone, I think that'll be nice. Group FaceTime, it seems like it's neat. I'm trying to think of, you know, I've done FaceTime with multiple people, like you're talking to like mom and dad on the phone, or, you know, brother and nephew on the phone. I'm trying to think of when, you know, like, I guess for something like this where we're on Skype.
I don't know when you record a podcast.
I know.
It should be nice to
not besides like this, but, you know, I mean, just it is, you know, a viable Skype replacement in this case. And anything they can do with photos to make it better, because quite frankly, my trip taught me a couple of things that were either hard or impossible to do with photos that I just thought was crazy that I couldn't do them. So like trying to share and do some albums and things like that. I'm like, what do you mean that doesn't work? And I'm like Googling for it on my phone and like, nope, that doesn't work. You can't do that. Photos is not made to do that. I'm like, ugh. So anything they can do for photos to make it better would be nice.
So what were you trying to do with photos that you couldn't
do? So when you try to share something, when you do a family share, what you're sharing, it's not really meant to be a shared album. It's a shared photo stream. So to try to create a stream or to try to create an album and just share that album is a little difficult. Or to try to actually get the photos in your shared photos to be in order is damn near impossible. Like, I just wanted to create an album of photos that I wanted to share and then share them with my family and actually keep them in order to where they weren't all jumbled up from the trip. Like, I had 3 days where I did different things. Like, I'm at the beach, I'm at this palace, I'm doing this. And I wanted all the photos that were similar to be, you know, chronological. And the best I'd come up with was creating an album and then selecting all of them from that album and then sharing them to the iPhoto shared library. And even then, it jumbled some of them. It generally kept them in the correct order, but it still moved some things around at that point. Or let's say I shared 5 things today, and then tomorrow I wanted to share 15 more, but some of them actually occurred before that 5. I just hadn't shared them yet. There's no way to get those to appear previously. You can't make the album go in order. You just have to remove everything from the shared album and then reshare all the photos back there. I mean, it's meant to be more like Instagram. Like, you send a pic, you send a pic, you send a pic where you can just see it, versus sharing an album. And I just always assumed it was like, you know, I'm creating an album and I'm sharing this album with, like sharing a playlist on music where I share a playlist. I can actually specify the order of that playlist that, you know, that they play in. I mean, you can hit shuffle, but you get a default order. You can't do that with iPhoto shared albums because it's really not an album. It's a stream. It's like more like Instagram. Like you post something, then you post something else, then you post something else. And it's made for like, it's technically made, at least from what I read, for like three or four people or more to be able to do that kind of thing. It's like your own personal Instagram feed where you send something, then I send something, and somebody else sends something. And, you know, it's not really made to just be a shared album like every other freaking photo service you've ever used since.
You want something more like Flickr or
something
Picasso,
more like Flickr or Picasso.
Picasso was still around.
Exactly. So anyway, that was very frustrating for me because I guess I'd never really used the feature a lot. And just when I started using it, it was very,
see how broken it is,
or just unintuitive. I mean, it is just unintuitive as hell to share pictures with somebody else. I mean, it's just bad.
No, I totally get it. What about Siri shortcuts? Excited about this?
Yeah, I think I could get into that. We'll see. I mean, I'll be looking for you guys to create some cool shortcuts and then tell me all about them. So.
Oh, absolutely. We will. I'm excited about the group FaceTime because there are situations where I want to do FaceTime. I want to do a group video chat that isn't the podcast. And everyone I know has iPhones, so I don't want to have to talk them through installing Skype and creating an account. I would rather just be able to add multiple people through FaceTime, so that that will make me happy. There was a situation today where I was texting with a couple of friends I went to high school with that live in different states, and I wanted to tell them a story, and we wanted to do it over video, and it's just like, how are we going to do this? And it's like, ugh. Come September, it'll be real easy. I'll just wait. Let's see. Are you using the... Jimmy,
as far as the shortcuts go, I'm more into the Amazon Assistant ecosystem here. So we'll have to see how that goes if I start using Siri more. But here in my apartment, all my lights and everything are all controlled by Amazon. So
we'll get you there. We'll get you on it. Well, I think that should just about do it. I have a couple of things that I want to hit on that are non-WWDC related. You guys have anything before I go into my stuff?
Nothing here.
So let's see, follow up from my whole ticket situation from a couple of weeks ago. Man, oh man. So the rough part about trying to pay a ticket in a small town is that they don't take credit cards. So I had sent in my payment, and you know, you don't want to get that warrant out for your arrest. You want them to go ahead and process the ticket. So I had till like June 21st or something to get that sorted. And about a week ago, I call in. I had sent my ticket. I sent in my payment a week and a half earlier. They still hadn't found it. We don't have it. I'm like, can't you take care of this over the phone? No, no, we can't take credit cards. You know, tiny, tiny town. So I go out over lunch. I do like $12 in postage. I do certified mail. Like I go to all this ridiculous trouble to send another check. No sooner than I get it sent, they call me back. Oh, we found your check. The officer hadn't posted the ticket, so we just set it aside. But now we found it. We're good. I hope you didn't send another check. So I called today. They had received my second check that I had, you know, I spent $12 in postage to get to them to make sure that they couldn't say they didn't get it. And while I had them on the phone, I offered to give that municipality a Square reader so that they could take credit cards. They could even do Apple Pay and Android, but you could use your watch in this tiny town where you couldn't previously do it. I'm like, I will give you free and clear this brand new unused Square reader so you can take credit card payments. Would you let me do that? And said municipality said, sorry, we can't accept that. So I don't know why, but if you're ever in my tiny town, which I will not name, if you're ever in my tiny town and you want to pay a ticket and you can't, just know that their favorite son offered to make it so that you could do it at no cost, for free. They could have had this functionality, and they basically told me no. So that made me sad that I tried to do something nice out of the goodness of my heart. So that, and as I told them, so no one ever has to go through this nonsense ever again, and they still wouldn't.
They weren't willing to give up that 2.9% transaction fee plus 30 cents.
Well, you know, in Georgia, they just pass that on to the consumer. So there's a convenience fee if you pay, you know, using a credit card, which I'm fine to do. So I don't have to go anywhere. I'll gladly pay it just not to have to deal with it. But was not an option here. They'd rather go through this stupid bureaucracy where they lose paper checks. But don't worry, everyone. I got a paper receipt in the email, and not like one you would get from an actual electronic system, a handwritten receipt from like the 1950s. It is insanity to me. It's like a time machine. You go back here. I'm surprised they even have radar.
It's like the pink carbon impression copy.
It wasn't quite that bad, but it was close.
I have a funny story from today that it's not exactly similar to this. So I ordered custom license plates for my car like 6 months ago, and then I wasn't sure if it got lost or what happened, and I finally got a hold of somebody, and they had been rejected as objectionable because they didn't know what the tag meant, which was kind of stupid. And so I had to write a letter, and I wrote a letter and said, hey, this is what the tags mean. It's Rebels, and it's an S2000, and here you go. This is what the tag means. And so they finally, you know, they were real nice about it. They replied back and said, oh, okay, Rebels, you know, we get it, Ole Miss. And so they finally come in today, or they came in last week, and I walked over to the courthouse, which is, you know, walking distance to my apartment here in Dallas. And I go up, and I give them my old tags and show them my insurance and driver's license. And the guy comes back, and he said, okay, the charge is 50. And I was like, 50? I'm like, I've already paid for the tags. Is this like for like a continuation, like make them go 6 months longer or something? And he goes, no. Oh, he goes, oh, you're understanding me. It's 50 cents. They wanted to charge me 50 cents because they had to give me a new sticker for my windshield that goes with the tag that had the correct tag on it instead of the one I had on my car. And I'm like, well, I don't have any cash on me. I'm going to have to put it on a card. And he goes, well, that's got a $3 fee associated with it. So I'm like, well, that's what I'm going to have to do. I'm like, I've already paid a lot of money for these tags. So if I have to pay $3.50 more, I'm fine. I just want my tags. And so he's like, all right, we'll scoot down two windows because she's got the credit card reader. And so I walk down there, and this very nice lady in line that was standing there in the queue, I guess, had been paying attention to my saga. And as I'm walking over to the credit card reader, she says, sir, I have 50 cents here if you need it. And so she gave me two quarters, and I handed them to the guy and walked out.
Got, and see, you're not even in a tiny town.
No,
you're
I'm in
huge
Dallas,
municipality.
Texas. But yeah, it was 50 cents was the charge to basically swap that tag out for another tag. And when he said 50, I'm thinking 50 bucks, right? And then he's like, oh, no, you misunderstood me. It's 50 cents. And I think part of me, when I walked out of there, I'm like, that guy's just laughing because that's like the Coca-Cola fund they got going up there. That's not even a real, probably not even a real charge. They just make it up. And those 50 cents goes in like some state worker or, you know, local worker, like a milk jug. And then they have like a party at the end of the year with all those 50 cents. I bet they do.
Yeah, Rankin County, they still take checks, of course, and they do take credit cards, but they do charge a $3.25 flat fee. So if you have a 20-year-old tag or the 25-year-old antique tag and you pay with a credit card, it's going to be $3.25 extra. And then if you have a $500 tag and you pay the credit card, it's going to be $3.25.
And you know what? That's fine. But, you know, the town that I called into was so small that I didn't even have to identify myself. They knew who I was based off of the fact that I had sent a second check in. So that, I don't know. It's Mayberry. What can you say?
It is so Mayberry. That's a good example. It's still Mayberry in 2018.
When you look at the ticket and you see the printing press company and you know the family that owns the printing press company that printed the ticket that you've just been written, that's a small town. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about is I switched from Pocket Casts to Overcast, which for me is a big deal because I've been on Pocket Casts, I know, right, for so long. So the long story behind that was, you know, when I was doing my great Android experiment, I've been driving a lot in the summer. Like, I've been out of town every single weekend for a month, and I'm probably going to be out another 3 or 4 weekends in a row, which is highly unusual for my doesn't-like-to-leave-the-house self, but there it is. And since I've been doing a lot of driving, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. Well, I want to build a playlist. Did you know that the Pocket Cast on iOS does not have this feature of playlists that every podcast player has ever had? So, you know, but the weird thing is the Android version does. So when I was doing my little Android experiment, I created a whole bunch of playlists that I had on my little burner Android phone that I was playing with. And I was going to, you know, import that list. I go into my app on iOS, and I just expect it's going to be synced over. Well, it doesn't exist because they don't have it. And I tweet at the people who wrote it, Shifty Jelly, who just got bought by NPR, I guess. And I was asking, hey, does this not exist? No, we got rid of that a long time ago in the iOS app. Just use Up Next. And I'm like, okay, not optimal, but I'll check it out. And even that wasn't consistent on, it wasn't a great experience is what I'm saying. I couldn't, you want to talk about not being able to sort things and it was a mess. So I was like, you know what? I was one of the Overcast One people who paid $5 for it forever ago. So I get a lot of the features, not all, but most. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going back to this for the time being, at least for as long as I'm doing this. So also, hi to any of the people who have discovered us through our Overcast ads. Hello, I'm using the same podcast player as
Holla.
You. And I think that is all that I have. Any you guys have anything else? This is about
it's
it.
It's nice to be back, fellas. I feel like I haven't recorded in like a month, or maybe it's probably been a month since I recorded, right? So it's nice to be back and see all your ugly faces here on Skype.
Exactly. We're going to be a bit more frequent now. There's a lot more to talk about. So many things. Have you installed the iOS 12 beta,
I have
Jim?
Not done any of the betas yet. I'm waiting a little bit longer.
Jason and I have been on since beta 1. Actually, it's still beta 1 right now. And honestly, I have no issues. It's been amazingly, particularly for a beta, but beta 1 on top of that, it's been really, really good for me. I'm not endorsing
yourself.
Any of our listeners. Well, first of all, yes. I'm not endorsing any of our listeners. Don't go being brave on anything that I say. But in my particular use case, I've put it on my primary phone, my iPhone 10. And aside from, you know, okay, I take that back. The one thing that I notice when I open and close my garage, my push notification that says my garage is open or closed through HomeKit is now empty. It's a little garage icon, but it's an empty notification. Other than that, I haven't had any issues.
So I'll echo that sentiment, right? It's smoking fast. The group notifications are outstanding. Some of the other features are outstanding. I do have a couple of financial apps that essentially insta-crash. So like the city app, you know, it'll flash the city logo and then crash. My Bank of America app will actually show the homepage balances. But if you click on any of the accounts to actually see recent transactions, they just sit there and spin. And something weird that happened over the weekend is Facebook Messenger would launch, crash, and then you would launch it again and it would work. And then if you would, you know, go back to it like a couple hours later, it would flash the screen, crash, and then you would launch it again and then it would work. So it's like you had to double launch it the whole time. Then the only other consistent oddity that I found is the codec, whatever codec Tumblr uses in the Tumblr app for video or animated GIFs is not, like, it's super pixelated. And
I think that's just a crappy Tumblr app. I haven't used Tumblr. You still use Tumblr?
Yeah. I mean, I was a Tumblr user for a lot of years, so I don't use it very often, but I will go back and see. Like, I used it a lot when I was cycling a lot. I'd post a lot of stuff and became friends with other cyclists, so I kind of go out and see what they've been up to.
Well, that should do it, fellas. Hopefully we'll be back a little more frequently than we have been. So I guess that'll do it for this week. So later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idol. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.